Midwest manufacturers don't have time for half-baked plans or one-size-fits-all consultants. Stoke RGA delivers tailored strategies with real execution, real alignment, and real results. If you're aiming for long-term growth, we're ready to go. Start at StokeRGA.com.
Welcome to New Manufacturing Insights, the official podcast of the Northeast Wisconsin Manufacturing Alliance and Insight Publications. I'm your co-host, Ann France, Executive Director of NUMA.
And I'm Kate Bruns, Manufacturing Editor at Insight. Ann and I would like to thank Stoke RGA for sponsoring this and all episodes of New Manufacturing Insights. Stoke RGA, growth strategy built for your shop floor and your bottom line.
Our guest today is an expert on two very hot topics for our manufacturers here in Northeast Wisconsin, automation and digital transformation. Amick Hinman is a senior network and security solution consultant with Rockwell Automation, and he joins us virtually today.
Amick, welcome to the podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Awesome. Well, it's great to chat with you. Rockwell Automation is a well-known, I think most of our listeners are going to know you, but you're a global leader in industrial automation and digital transformation. So we'd love if you could start out by telling us about your role and how you work with manufacturers to improve their operations.
Sure. I've been with Rockwell for a little over 30 years, all on the software and control and network and cyber side, with the last 5 years more narrowly focused on that space. So my current role is to help our customers better architect and secure their industrial control systems. And oftentimes that's, you know, we hear the word digital transformation. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes that is taking all this wealth of data and, you know, from the plant floor and leveraging that somehow in some type of, you know, cloud-based service. So that's the other kind of piece that kind of is accelerating this need, not only the threats, but also, you know, this need to secure our systems.
You know, manufacturers hear terms like Industry 4.0, smart manufacturing, artificial intelligence, and the industrial Internet of Things. Which technologies are delivering the greatest value today, and where do you see the most excitement among manufacturers?
I think there certainly is a lot of excitement around AI, and we see that taking its place and making its way down into industrial control systems. I think a lot of people are not sure how to utilize this. Mm-hmm. How to do it safely and effectively, whether it's, you know, what to put on-prem, what to leverage in the cloud, how do they secure their data. So that's one area that I think is certainly accelerating and changing how we do things from our, you know, everyday life, right? I mean, we're all utilizing AI. It's a very, very powerful tool. We see that also being used on the offensive side and defensive side when it comes to cyber. So I think that's probably the biggest acceleration I think, you know, that we see beyond, you know, or maybe extension of, you know, Industry 4.0, right? Because we've always, you know, with Industry 4.0, seen the need to, hey, there's got to make sense of this data. We need to make better business decisions. The data is down at the control system layer. It may not be connected. How do we get access to this data and do it securely? Mm-hmm. So,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah, I know one of my Industry 4.0 chair said once, we're data rich, but information poor. And we have so much data. How do you make, you know, if, you know, really good decisions from that?
Well, yeah. And how do you slow down enough to harness the data, the information, mm-hmm. and utilize it, right? Mm-hmm. And it's very much an integrated process, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And how to make sense of that data, mm-hmm. right? I think that's the other challenge is you have different, you know, coming up with some type of unified namespace to take disparate control systems, disparate data, and unify it so it makes sense, and then securely take that data up to whatever service you want. Right?
So we wanted to have you on in particular because CISA recently issued some U.S. guidance stating that critical infrastructure must adopt zero trust for OT systems. Tell us what that is and to whom that's applying.
Yeah, I think that that applies to really any manufacturer, you know, whether it's discrete process manufacturing. It really emphasizes this need to secure our systems and do it in a defense in depth manner. And so that document, I think, does a very good job of going through and, you know, taking a concept that has been, you know, utilized and adopted in the IT side and putting up some recommendations and boundaries and how do we effectively deploy this in OT or ICS environments, industrial control system environments.
What's the difference between a guidance and a requirement? Are there going to be checks on this in some formal way?
No, this is just a guide. I mean, depending on the, you know, there's a lot of things that are released from CISA that are guides, how to deploy, you know, remote access solution and deploying zero trust is just one of the recent guides that was released. So, you know, there are different critical infrastructures that fall under, that have different regulatory agencies that have requirements, like, you know, prime example is like NERC SIP for power generation or you know, you get into nuclear applications. They have to follow that as a requirement. There's reporting, there's auditing against that, you know, against NERC SIP. So there are different standards that follow. 62443 is another one that's more holistic from an industrial cybersecurity standard that even guidelines reference. So for example, another guideline for securing industrial control system is from NIST, NIST 800-82. There's a revision 3, revision 4 is about ready to be released. I know it's up for public comment. That's an excellent document. It is just a guideline. It's not a standard. Okay. It references other standards out there like 62443, and it also references NERC SIN. So I don't know if that helped, but it's, you know, it's dependent on the critical infrastructure and, you know, whether it's a guide or a standard.
Mm-hmm. I'm just picturing you reading all these guidances for fun. Is that like your bedside table?
I do. You know, I do enjoy reading these, especially, you know, both the guidance and the standards just to see what's coming up. There's another one in Europe that's coming out to support machine regulation. That's still kind of in progress. Mm. So and that one combines both safety and security. So when we're securing these systems and OT, the primary, you know, we always talk about cyber physical systems. So we got to make sure that system is, you know, the primary focus is to make sure that system does not affect, you know, availability and above that is safety and the integrity of the compromise. Because these are, you know, it's people that are, and people and processes that can be affected, you know, if something goes wrong.
So you alluded to this earlier, but zero trust in an IT environment is applicable here, but it looks different from OT zero trust, right? We can't just copy and paste those controls.
Right. Yeah, definitely. And it depends on, so patch management's a good example. You know, we can't, there's so many dependencies when it comes to patch management on the industrial control system side that we don't have on the IT side. Typically you're looking at, you know, hey, I'm patching I've got an operating system patch, so I know that it's running this specific operating system. There might be some software compatibilities there that are tied to that, you know, based on the software that's running on that computer, but that's really pretty much where it stops. You look at the industrial control system side, now we have not only the software that needs to be compatible, we look at the underlying firmware that's running the controller and then its dependencies. And so it can become very complex really quick. And those systems are running critical systems. They may or may not have a high availability option. Right? We certainly have that capability on a, you know, like a Logix redundant controller, for example. We can put one in, you know, flash one primary controller, run in simplex mode, have the other one take over and then flash the other one. But oftentimes that availability, that redundancy doesn't exist, or the product, the capability of the products don't have it. So yeah, it definitely is a challenge. I think a lot of things start within the IT organization, or within IT, and then are adopted by OT.
I think we hear that a lot, is mm-hmm. IT and OT has to work together and can't be in silos these days.
Mm-hmm. So what companies will have the biggest challenges implementing zero trust for OT? And how about legacy and multi-vendor environments?
Yeah, so I think that's, you know, one of the challenges. It certainly is easier if you have a, you know, a modern environment. So if we're dealing with a brand new greenfield facility that's, let's say, standardized on Rockwell. And those newer products support SIP security It's an open standard, allows us to define, create, you know, whether there's device identities with certificates, we can turn on integrity or confidentiality, define the zones, the devices that are allowed to talk within those zones, and the conduits, which is communication from zone to zone. That's all supported in all the newer products. Mm-hmm. So that's an easy kind of answer for, you know, all Rockwell, or we've, you know, extended that to OPC UA. And by the way, that's an example of a solution, ODVA, and manage the SIP security, and that SIP security is based upon TLS, which is what we use in the IT side, right? When you go to a web page from your computer, we've got a secure session from our client to the server. We're utilizing that same functionality with TLS for as a wrapper for the common industrial protocol traffic, or SIP traffic. So that's a prime example of a technology that was, you know, really deployed, designed in the IT space, and then adopted in OT. So that's a, you know, for a customer brand new greenfield facility, that's easy. The mm-hmm. challenge becomes with, you know, facilities that have been around a while. They've got, you know, 40-year-old, mm-hmm. you know, controllers still being used, and we still see those today. PLC-5s are still being used in sometimes critical applications, and there's no security, you know, for those guys. Mm-hmm. So now you got to look at how do we deploy this zero trust in those configurations, and oftentimes it's done with, you know, firewalls or overlay solutions, and those can be agnostic, but you do have to be careful on, you know, deploying those to make sure that you're not interrupting that system and process. Mm-hmm. But so, I think that's the mm-hmm. that's probably the biggest challenge, is that, you know, existing facilities with multiple vendors, is how do you support this?
Right.
So do companies really need to get all new equipment, or are there practical steps for segmenting hardware that wasn't built with modern security in mind? And many small and mid-sized manufacturers want to modernize, but may feel overwhelmed by the investment or the complexity.
Yeah.
Right?
I think, like anything, it's better to start somewhere. So you can just, you know, start small. That's mm-hmm. what we always talk about. Even if you're laying out a network, understand, kind of following that concept of least privilege, who needs to access that, and then start to restrict access. So that can be done still on smaller systems, and or even in a phased approach with, okay, we're going to start with this area and secure this section. One of the things with zero trust is assume compromise. Mm. So we're not trusting, you know, we're assuming compromise, and we're restricting those systems with, you know, with defense and depth control. So you could put a, you know, upgrade that switch to support some act, you know, one that supports access control lists, or, you know, maybe you want to put a next generation firewall in, hardened firewall in between that PLC-5 and the rest of the system. Right. And then turn on, you know, the restrictions to say only this engineering workstation should ever talk to this processor. And we're going to disallow, you know, we're only going to allow, we're not going to allow downloads to that controller, for example, remotely. I mean, so you can restrict some of those functions based upon kind of a next generation firewall. So that's how I would approach it is, you know, obviously, yeah, we'd love to see everybody come in and pull everything out and upgrade, you know, brand new control systems, but that's just not reasonable and realistic.
Is there anything else about zero trust that you think people should know that we didn't give you a chance to talk about before I pivot to another topic?
Yeah, I think, well, it's not just one control. It's you know, we've been talking about defense in depth for a long time, and I think that's the one thing I really like about that CISA article, is it reinforces that. You know, it says, hey, deploy role-based access control. We've had, and the Rockwell, if we're talking about Rockwell control system, we've had role-based access control for a long time in our software. That's factory talk security. We can tie that to a single sign-on and make that, I always talk about making security frictionless. So when you sign in the morning, you log into the domain controller, we pass the credentials over, we configure the policy ahead of time to what that person can and can't do, and we can tie that all the way down to the controller if we want. That doesn't cost anything. It's built in the software. It just needs to be configured and deployed. So, you know, that's, I think that layering on, I think that document does a good job of talking about how you should be deploying things, and it's always in a defense in depth, you know, manner. disabling ports, you know, and just kind of layer on security as much as you can. So I think the companies really just need to start to prioritize security in their systems, look at what they have, you know, ask your suppliers what we can do to lock down this system. And they, I bet you, you know, you're surprised on the Rockwell control systems, and I know others have this capability as well. There's a lot of functionality just needs to be enabled. That's just not enabled today. Mm-hmm. I mean, reducing tags. There's a function in the Logix controllers that we've had since version 16 where you can turn external tag access to none. And oftentimes the majority of those tags that are accessible don't need to be accessible. Those are used programmatically in the controllers. So that's a, you know, just a recommendation of probably the last thing on Zero Trust is just, you know, make sure you follow recommended defense in depth practices, least privilege, leverage role-based access control, you know, access control list if you can, and really start to lock those systems down.
Well, I want to take the opportunity, because you have 3 decades of experience at Rockwell Automation, to just talk a little bit about automation in general. We've talked a lot on this podcast about the, you know, replacing jobs, but also the fact we don't have enough workers. What's kind of your view on how automation is helping companies address workforce shortages while still creating opportunities for employees? What's your sort of your macro take on that?
Yeah, I think the efficiency comes into play of how do we optimize and reduce you know, remedial task. Oftentimes we, you know, think of tasks that a robot can replace, you know, that's repetitive, that lead to, you know, injuries on the human side, you know, like carpal tunnel and definitely those that plays a huge role in making systems more efficient. At the same time, that offers opportunities for people to, you know, sure does it might take the person's job that's, you know, doing that manual labor and task, but there's also opportunities to get trained on how to support that equipment, how to, you know, maintain that. I think that's the, we're going to see the, you know, AI continuing. There's a lot of fear around, you know, artificial intelligence and it taking jobs. And certainly it has in some cases where you're analyzing a bunch of data and you need to do that at scale. You know, that's a perfect job for AI. Mm-hmm. When you need the, you know, the complex rationale and kind of decision making, how you're going to evaluate and certainly the hands-on of, there's a lot of still a hands-on jobs of we need to maintain this equipment, right? And I don't see AI replacing, you know, those functions, you know, certainly not for a long time.
Can we quote you on that now?
Yeah.
So you look across the manufacturing landscape, what characteristics do you see in companies that are successfully embracing new technologies like AI and staying competitive? What does it kind of take to be a leader in this realm?
Well, I think you have to love learning. You got to continue to learn, read, adapt, be open to new, you know, to new methods and you know, avenues. In some cases, you know, working together with others. You can't do it all. There's just so much information out there. Things are changing so quickly. You can't be an expert at everything. You have to be willing to reach out, whether that's an internal resource or someone external. That's, you know, probably how, you know, my suggestion there on, you know, how companies are successful, you know, make sure they're adopting. Look at best practices. You know, we oftentimes will look at a use case on a company that's performing and not only maybe use that as maybe a success story, but companies like to see that. They want to see someone else in that same industry and how are they tackling a problem. And then you have to, you know, adapt and adjust accordingly. You know, whether it's utilizing, you know, video AI models or we see that with like, you know, prime example, like Emulate 3D. We Rockwell bought a company called Emulate 3D. They were a Rockwell technology partner. It allows us to simulate exactly what's going on in that control system, even down to physics models, and tie in either hardware in the loop, meaning a physical PLC controller, mm-hmm. or a combination of that and software. So now you can design this system ahead of time, factor in how that machine's supposed to operate, how machines to machine operates, mm-hmm. to minimize the time it takes for you know, that system to be started up and make sure it's going to function as designed. So just another example of of a new kind of technology. You know, the you might have heard what's the word I'm thinking of?
Digital
not
twin.
Simulation. Digital twin, thank you. Mm-hmm. Yeah, digital twin. Mm-hmm. So this is a, you know, that's where digital twin comes into place, right? It's simulating that process. So that was a new concept. A lot of people initially were hesitant, but now realize same thing with you know, the kind of the digital revolution and taking advantage of this and cloud. There was still a lot of pushback on cloud adoption. Now I think there's some cases where unless you have, you know, do you put your SCADA up in the cloud? Some people are saying do that. Mm-hmm. I think if you take a look at majority manufacturer, they're going to say no way. We're keeping our data local. Mm-hmm. We don't want to rely on internet connections. You know, others are more progressive out there. So, mm-hmm. I guess a long-winded answer to, got to be open, got to be continuing to learn. You know, be otherwise you're going to be left behind. Mm-hmm. One of my specialists that I work with, always said, adapt, adopt, or perish. Mm-hmm. Right. So if you just stay in the status quo, you might be left behind. Mm-hmm. And might not be competitive out there.
Mm-hmm, agreed. So as we conclude today's episode, we always ask our guests, what is your best leadership insight?
Probably, you know, if I look back, you know, I've been a manager a couple of years and I've had some excellent managers. I think from a leadership standpoint, you have to be kind of, I always think that servant leadership. Mm-hmm. and being willing to, you know, what can you do to help your employees? Those are, I think, one of the best leaders that I've seen and I've had, and I really like that trait of kind of the servant leadership.
Mm-hmm. Well, Amick Hinman, thank you so much for joining us today on New Manufacturing Insights.
Yeah, my pleasure.
We would like to thank Woodward Community Media for production support and Stoke RGA for sponsorship support. New Manufacturing Insights is available everywhere you listen to audio podcasts, with new episodes out every Thursday. We will be back again next week with more New Manufacturing Insights. Until then, bye.